This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org. Today on CityCast Denver, Governor Polis can't seem to stop with the bad takes. This time he's talking about childcare and abortion, and fellow Dems aren't having it. Me and producer Paul Caroli are talking about the Gov's flubs. Plus, we debate a possible WNBA team coming to Denver and dig into a big pile of feedback from you, our dear listeners, about the DPS seclusion room scandal. Today is Tuesday, August 15th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about.
It was such a slow weekend. We went to the Carnation Festival in Wheat Ridge.
Have you ever done that? Right. No, I haven't, but we were a big source of carnations before we started outsourcing everything to other countries. We grew carnations here.
Yeah, that was my favorite detail of the whole thing. I was going to... despite there not being a commercial carnation grown in Wheat Ridge since 2008, the 54th annual Wheat Ridge Carnation Festival went forward as planned.
I love it.
No carnations, but good times had by all.
Oh, Wheat Ridge is really cool.
Yeah? What do you like in Wheat Ridge?
I mean, I just like the vibe there. I mean, also the architecture, a lot of it is like mid-century, you know, because that's really when it was booming. But it's just like one of those municipalities around us that are, I just feel it has a really nice sort of small town vibe in a way that I kind of miss about Denver.
It does like have it. That a little bit. We stopped for this at this market, Palisade Peach Source.
Oh, that's
great,
right.
Source, Heine's Market.
Heine's.
You ever been there?
No, but really someone good. Told us about them. Maybe it was on Twitter.
Did we? Oh.
Someone, I think it was on Twitter, was like Heine's Market. And I was like, okay, cool.
They
you
got
went
a
there?
Bunch of varieties too. And I learned a new fact about peaches.
Okay.
You know how some of them are like the flesh clings to the pit and some of them like
it comes right off. Uh-huh.
There's a word for that. Clings,
oh, the stone?
Cling stone versus freestone.
So that's a variety of peaches. You could get one where it really adheres to the pit or the stone, or it just comes right off. Like if you cut it in half, you can kind of twist it apart.
Peach fans out there will know intuitively, like, oh yeah, that's happened on some peaches and not others.
I always thought that was like a default of, or a defect of whatever, how ripe it was or something.
But. Yeah, I thought so too. Or just like it depended on that particular peach, but no.
Interesting.
Hey, there you go. Peach facts.
Peach facts. Came here for the peach facts.
So that's the vibe.
Hi, Paul.
Very peachy. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Here we are. It's good to be back. Speaking of the news, let's get right into it.
You've been talking
about what did our governor say this time?
Polis. Man.
Governor Jared Polis. He's been on a bit of a tear, putting his foot in his mouth from some people's perspective. For others, maybe they like it. I don't know. We'll talk about it. So I think first we should talk about July 23rd. Polis appeared on CNN with Utah Governor Spencer Cox to promote their new Disagree Better initiative. Cox is, of course, a Republican. So here's the quote. CNN's Dana Bash asked Polis, how do you, as America's first openly gay governor, disagree better with someone like Cox who says your marriage is illegitimate? To which Polis responded, quote, you start with common ground on something like abortion choice. Democrats don't believe abortion is good. We believe it's bad. It should be minimized. How do you prevent unwanted pregnancies to make sure people are empowered with the information they need?
Has he not been listening to all of the people that talk to him about this on the regular? I mean, the organizations that help craft the legislation, the legislators themselves who are women, who have never said this, at least in the last couple of years, I would say. The big problem here. Abortion is not bad. Democrats don't believe abortion is bad. I don't. And I assume the folks that I elect to legislate also don't think it's bad. It's healthcare. And when we talk about it in this way, this moral judgment, is it good or is it bad? It really undermines the premise of why we need access all the time, everywhere, no questions asked. Because people have abortions for so many different reasons. Mm. And I think we've come a long way from this thought of, even as a Democrat myself, who a couple years ago might tell you, yeah, I mean, it's just like, we've got to have it because, you know, people are in positions where they can't have kids. Like they just don't, you know, something happened, or maybe just like all these extreme situations. And I've come along to think, actually, you don't have to be in an extreme situation to have an abortion. Abortion is just healthcare, and it should be accessible regardless of why you need it.
Well, let me push on you here for a second, Bree, because when I first read this, I thought, okay, Polis is sitting next to a Republican. He's trying to use very broad language. He's trying to live his promise to disagree better. And it's not like an abortion is a situation that you want to get into. That's how I heard it. Like, it's not a good outcome.
But it shouldn't have to be thought of as a situation. It's a healthcare issue. Like, sometimes you get pregnant and you can't have the baby because your body can't, you know, you have another health issue. I mean, there's just so many reasons that I just don't think that it sets us up for a good conversation to disagree better if we have to sort of diminish the reasons why abortion should be accessible across the board.
Well, that kind of brings us back to the politics here, because like you said, Polis has signed a whole bunch of bills
yes.
promoting protections for people's right to an abortion here in Colorado. We're a place where people from other states come because of the work Polis and his colleagues have done. So how do you square that?
I mean, I'm glad that he has done that. I just wonder how much he's listening to the people that are helping him make these decisions, or at least informing his decision, because it just felt like a step down from where we are. Everything is in place. You can still do that. Also, he's talking to someone who's running Utah, which is
right.
notoriously like, zero abortions. I don't care why.
Shout out to our friends at CityCast Salt Lake.
Sorry, you guys. I mean, really, it's a bummer.
It is.
And I just worry when we have people in positions of power like this not really reflecting the lived experiences of their constituency. Almost half of Colorado is women. And that's a huge part of this conversation. I mean, the conversation around gender and all this is aside, this is about healthcare. So people who can have abortions should be able to have abortions, or people that can get pregnant should be able to have abortions. And I just worry when he said that, I was just like, I don't know if he understands it.
What do you worry about? What are the implications of a misunderstanding like this in terms of policy?
I think about our colleague, Justine Sandoval, our correspondent that comes on, who worked in abortion legislation for a decade. Every single session, bills come up. This is a constant fight for healthcare providers who are for abortion access. It's just like costs money and time and energy to fight these things constantly. And if we don't have our lead, you know, the person that we've elected on beliefs like, or on policies like this, if we don't have him 100% in our corner, it just feels like we're still fighting an uphill battle that we're trying to convince the person that says they believe in it. That's the last person we need to be convincing. And it just spoke to me that he maybe doesn't understand the gravity of what he said.
Which interesting.
Is abortion all the time, on demand, no questions. That's where I'm at.
All right, let's move on to this other quote from Polis, because it's
a little more complicated.
It's more complicated, but I think there's something similar at the core of it.
Okay.
So this is a quote that Polis gave to Nine News last week. He's talking up the long-awaited rollout of universal preschool. This was one of his big campaign promises. So the idea is that it would be, you know, free preschool. And that's kind of where my understanding of this stops. I don't have kids. All I have is friends who tell me how expensive childcare is,
yeah.
how big of a pain it is to get your kid in a good school. So I understand why more than 9,000 parents were upset when they were told just a couple of weeks ago they wouldn't be eligible. So here's the quote from Polis in response to a question about those 9,000 parents.
There's a difference between preschool and childcare. We are funding high quality preschool.
So loaded.
Yeah.
So
it's
loaded.
A lot there.
Yeah. So I hear what he's saying, that like universal preschool does not mean care from 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. or whatever, which is what childcare often provides, right? I hear what he's saying there. But I think the struggle some parents were having, which is paying for childcare in this state is very expensive. It's for some folks who are rent or mortgage burdened, This is twice as much as that. So they're trying to scramble to figure out, okay, so I get 15 to 20 hours of free. I'm still trying to fill in those last gaps. And that can be a really precarious process. So the fact that some parents were relying on this program to be part of that solution, and then all of a sudden being like, oh, psych, it's not, I can understand why it was jarring, because all of a sudden they're trying to find care for their kids 40 hours a week versus 20 hours a week.
Yeah. I mean, if I was one of those families that just found out last minute that I wasn't going to have the child care, I thought, yeah, I would be freaking out.
I would be freaking out. So, you know, my son's child care / school provider, RB Fast, she started a school about a year ago. She had been working in Montessori for, I don't know, 10 or 20 years before that, before she decided, I want to start my own school. And I have watched how much work goes into creating the space. And I'm not just talking about a beautiful building where kids feel safe. Like the actual logistical.
Not just that. A place where kids feel safe. That seems gargantuan.
It's massive.
A lot of work.
It's massive. But then you get the state involved and the all the regulations and things you have to adhere to. And I asked her about what she thought about the governor's statement. And she said, the governor's comment that there's a difference between early childhood education and childcare is especially frustrating because the official position of the state of Colorado is that all licensed early childhood programs in the state are high quality. That's why we have way more stringent regulations and requirements for staff education and experience than most states in the U.S. We've all spent the last 10 years working to improve the quality of all licensed programs across the board in Colorado. It's been expensive and challenging. So to hear him dismiss us in that way was pretty infuriating. So she's saying, we provide high quality. He was kind of like, childcare is this thing, and early childhood education is this thing. And she's like, no, we do that. We do that whole thing. And we adhere to all these regulations so that if your kids start at 14 months in my kid's school, and they're getting an education. This isn't just daycare. But I talked to her in person then about it. And the other thing that struck me and struck her was like, why does there have to be a difference? Kids need care and childcare is expensive, and we don't need to demean childcare and say like, oh, well, if that's what you're looking for in school, then good luck. Like, regardless, kids have to go somewhere.
I read this interview with Polis, and I think he does definitely make that distinction. And for some reason, that's important. He says, the biggest benefit from preschool that studies show is developmentally appropriate in that 15 to 20 hour range that he says they're supplying. So he's doing this based on some research about preschool and what that does for a kid. And then he also, like, he makes clear to differentiate, and I'm quoting again, and say that we're focused on pedagogy.
We also care a lot about helping families manage their lives and meet their needs for childcare, which again is done in a different way.
This is his contention.
Yeah. And I guess, again, this to me is a nuanced conversation. And I would say, I mean, I think when Marshall Zellinger did this interview with Nine News, I think he went into it with this data like, okay, we have almost 10,000 families that all of a sudden their days are, they don't know what they're going to do. And I think to me, his response to that was like, not exactly connecting the dots here. Like, this is more than just that high quality time. It's people need help. And maybe that is not something he was trying to address directly there. But I think when he tried to make the distinction between daycare and pre-K, it just sent a message that said, maybe you don't really know what people are going through, which is we need both of those things. Children are in school, preschool through 12th grade. That's childcare, because working parents have to have somewhere for their children to go. I mean, on top of it just being an education, it also functions as childcare, which is why we have after school programs and all these things. So I guess I think the struggle was just, does he fully understand what folks are going through when they all of a sudden have to scramble to find more support that the state kind of said they were going to provide some of these families?
Well, I know one thing for sure, and that's that a childless adult, do not understand what this struggle is like, but I would like to, because every year around this time, it seems like childcare, pre-K, preschool seems like a giant problem. I want to know what people are going through. So if you have a story, you know, as your kid transitions back to school, let us know. Leave us a voicemail, send us a text on the childcare crisis hotline. Actually, no, that's a different hotline.
Yeah, I was like, that sounds like a serious hotline.
Yeah.
Call us on the What's Up With Your Childcare Situation hotline, yes. 720-500-5418. Leave us a voicemail with your name and neighborhood and your situation. That is the What's Up With Your Childcare Situation hotline, 720-500-5418. Because, yes, I also would love to hear from folks what they're going through, because everybody's situation is different. And I think it helps us understand what our neighbor is going through in the world if we hear a wider variety of experiences.
Yeah. Also, we're paying for it now. That's what this whole thing is about. It's a government program.
Which rules?
Anyway, we're going to go to a quick break and we'll be back to talk about something else.
This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next-generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high-quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a two-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CITYCASTDENVER for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com. And we're back. We're going to talk about sports. I know people don't love it, but I do. That's my intro.
Sports is great.
And I'm not even talking about the Nuggets right now, which I want to, because AG went to Serbia with Nikola Jokic and hung out with his family, which is the sweetest thing I've ever seen.
It's very cool.
But that's not what we're talking about. They are friends. I love it. We're talking about the WNBA. Paul, there's some big wigs from the WNBA coming to Denver this week. What is going on?
Well, what's going on is the WNBA is very hot right now. It's like a 25-year-old league. They started in 1996. They've gone through crazy ups and downs. It's not really something that I've ever paid attention to until learning from the Denver Post that WNBA commissioner, because of this growth in viewership, she has said they want to expand. So they put out a list of 10 cities where the 12-team WNBA is going to consider putting a new team, putting a new franchise, you know, a brand new sports company with a product that you can watch in a stadium. It is kind of cool. It could be a whole new thing. And they're doing that this week. They're coming to look at some venues. They're coming to meet with some investors, some interesting people.
I think you said something very telling at the beginning of this, which is I don't pay much attention to. And I also don't. But I think
it's such a huge question.
I think to me, it's because I don't have a team. And I think if I had a team, I would pay more attention to it. Like, but I'm a very basic low level sports fan. So I'm like, I root for Denver.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way if they did put a new team here. But to be honest, I'm more interested in this as like a case study for how to build a sports league. Like the business of sports has been so fascinating to me lately. Thinking about like how Kroenke put together these two championship teams with the Nuggets and the Avalanche and like has cultivated this and has these big plans for our city. Like, I don't know. I think sports is like secretly a very important way to measure just how a city's doing.
Did you watch that Lakers, the Winning Time series?
No, should I?
On HBO? I think you would like it because it's about this very thing about how this gentleman came in, I mean, with a group of folks and transformed the Lakers into the team we know today, which is he made them rock stars, right?
Right.
But this all had to do with, you know, the city itself and what their interest was. And I agree with you, Paul. What I think is interesting, and I think something that I know strikes your fancy about this story is who is one of the people behind this conversation with the WNBA coming to Denver?
Yes, this is the key to the whole thing, because I know Robert Cohen a little bit. Robert Cohen is the chairman and CEO of IMA Financial, which is like a downtown money business. They make money by moving money around.
I want to be in one of those one day, but yes.
Yeah, seems like a cool place to be. But he's also one of like the biggest champions of the Denver Olympics bid, the one that was most recent, like a few years ago. They were trying to get the 2030 games here. So he's a guy that really believes in the power of sports and the aspiration and the like trying to push yourself to just like be the best human you can be. That's the stuff that really gets him excited. So when I hear about him trying to bring a WNBA team here, I don't know. I think he's a very serious person. I think this sounds like a very serious bid.
This seems a little different though than from the Olympics, in that like the infrastructure would be I think that I'm thinking about the reasons people didn't want the Olympics
right.
here.
Yeah.
Right. It's a burden
it's
on
a one
cities.
Time
it's a one type
yeah, thing.
Build stadiums to be used yeah. once, displace people, blah, blah, blah.
It's a gentrification machine.
For sure.
Yeah.
And this is very different in that you're saying it's like, it's about the sport and about bringing that to a city that's a sports city.
Yeah. Well, it could be. I mean, it could be if the audience responds here. Like I said, the WNBA has been through ups and downs, and that mostly is about audience.
Yeah.
But I think, like, I think they have the talent to make the games good enough to attract the audience. Like there was this detail in Noelle Phillips. She's the Denver Post reporter who was on this. She said that the number 8 draft pick in last year's draft went to the Las Vegas Aces, who proceeded to cut her
before
the
season even started. So it's like there's so little
there's
opportunities.
No spots on these rosters because it's only a 12-team league. So they clearly have the talent to expand at the current quality level.
Well, I just think about how many girls probably, I mean, I grew up playing basketball in middle school and there's, you know, my best friend was a college athlete. She played, she played volleyball at the college level. So to me, from like a feminist perspective, I think this is a really cool opportunity. It's reminding me a little bit of when I was a kid and I played softball and A League of Their Own came out mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be a baseball player. Psych. Like I got really into the Atlanta Braves. Like there was like no, cause the Rockies didn't exist yet, but like there wasn't a trajectory that seemed realistic for me.
Mm.
And I could see where it could be even more incredible to have these opportunities for athletes to have an option. And I think something that was interesting in this Denver Post piece was so many of these women athletes go overseas. Because that's where the opportunities are, which yeah. NBA players do as well. But there's just so little, like you're saying, there's so few opportunities. Expanding this could mean a lot, just not just for Denver, but for the sport.
It could be. And like I said, the viewership numbers are up. So it seems like there's interest. And maybe I mean, the Nuggets just won. Basketball energy's high here.
I was thinking that.
It's the right time. There was one other detail I wanted to ask you
yes.
about this. 1996 to 1998, there was a women's professional basketball team here called the Colorado Explosion. Did you ever go see them? Did you ever hear that?
I did not know this existed. But also, this is like, I'm in high school
right.
at this time, and I am fully dressed as Courtney Love, so I'm not paying attention to sports.
Not on the sports trip. Okay.
No. So not to say that this was not an incredible thing for us to have, but I think I'm glad you brought it up.
I mean, sounds like it was short-lived.
But it was important to say this isn't going to be the first time that we had a professional women's basketball team here. It will be the second time.
Should we bring the name back? The Explosion?
I mean,
that's pretty 90s.
I was like, the X is very 90s. I mean, I also am a child of the X Games and that era of extreme sports. Thank mm-hmm. you, MTV. But I would agree it's a little dated.
What do you got a pitch? The Denver, I mean, our producer Olivia pitched, maybe I can't top this, the Denver Nuggets. That's great.
Which I liked as the Rockets. My addition to that was like, maybe that's the cheerleaders' names.
Perhaps.
Because I would feel as a basketball player that was a little demeaning. But also, I don't know. Actually, I don't know. Now I take that back. I like those sorts of iterations on names, but I could see where it wouldn't be universally appealing. I would love to know what listeners would think because we have...
Honestly, yeah.
What do we have? Okay, Rockies, Mountains, Avalanche, mm-hmm. Mountains related.
Rapids.
Mountains related. The Denver Nuggets.
How about the...
That's when we were obsessed with being a mining place. I love
also
mining.
Also kind of the mountains.
Mining-themed Denver was a pretty awesome time.
Yeah. Well, so I don't know, maybe a mining theme name for this WNBA team or
the Prospectors,
the Prairie Dogs,
the Baby Doe Tapers.
listeners, top
the
ours. Send us one that's better than these. To the same hotline we mentioned earlier. Let's call it the
Denver's
WNBA Hopes and Dreams Hotline. 720-500-5418. Again, that's 720-500-5418. We have one last thing before we wrap up the show today. It's my favorite segment where we get to hear from our listeners. And this is a bit of a tough one because our show on Friday, where we talked to former DPS teacher, current Aurora Public Schools teacher, Tim Hernandez, about the seclusion room scandal at McAuliffe International School, proved to be quite divisive.
This is
a story that hits people.
Yes, and I expected that. And I just want to say I'm really glad our listeners responded. This story had been sort of percolating over the week or two, and we were seeing different conversations happening, and we had wanted to have Tim on, and it was like, let's talk to somebody who's worked within the education system, fully understanding this is not the representation of every teacher, but I just like, I always want to give listeners a little bit of a thought on like why we chose that person. And I, to me, it was like, who better than someone who's also been sort of pushed out of that system to talk about what he sees from the educator's perspective. However, we heard from some of you who are educators, and I'm excited to share what we heard.
Number one, I can't share the voicemail, but I will share a little bit about what this teacher from McAuliffe called in to talk about.
Yeah.
So this is a person who's at the school where there was this seclusion room where the principal was fired and is now, there's this campaign to reinstate him. So the teacher says, we feel under attack. We feel like all the work we've done shrinking the achievement gap has not just been ignored, but trampled on. This is a person who has no connection with the de-escalation room or that whole program, that whole side of the school.
Fair, totally fair.
But just feels like they've been caught up in this moment where they feel targeted, like I said. So they also say other educators in this school feel like they've been repeatedly asking the district for guidance and resources and training. And this is a really important point that other people also echoed. They don't feel like they have the training to deal with students who might be using a de-escalation room.
Fair. Yeah. I can't imagine. I think we talked about it a little bit in the episode, and I'm sorry if we didn't highlight it enough. Teachers are asked to do so many things in the classroom. And I actually talked to a teacher this weekend who's trying to get out of teaching for the first time in 15 years because she's exhausted.
I've heard similar stories.
And she does middle school. She teaches middle school. And she was just like, I just can't. I'm asked to do too much. I can't do it anymore. So I hear that. I hear them. And I'm glad that they shared that with us. Like, yeah, because teachers, not only are they not having the training, should they have to be doing all of these different things? It's a lot to regulate an entire room full of human beings, or at least keep the peace.
I have thoughts on this after reading all this feedback, but I want to share more from our listeners. So this is a person who identified only as exhausted educator. They write, quote, I am a DPS employee writing anonymously under a made-up email address because I fear retaliation from the district. You missed a huge part of the story. The reality is there is very little employees of DPS can do when a student is out of control and acting violent toward themselves or others. The, quote, discipline matrix that the district guides staff to use when incidents of increased severity or violence occur provides little to no real consequences. And it certainly provides nothing in the moment to help mitigate these situations. Do you know what this matrix is, Bree? Because I saw this recently, actually.
I don't.
So this is like a policy document that DPS has circulated across the district for, like, you know, if there's a disturbance in the class, it ranks them. It describes different types of the disturbances, like maybe a student's acting out, or, you know, all the way up to the really serious stuff, like a student brought a gun. There's a gun in the classroom. What do you do?
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It gives the teacher guidelines and it gives the administrators guidelines on what to do in response to certain situations. So that's what they're saying. There's no...
It's like we have sort of guidelines, but they're not enough. And it sounds like there's not no real consequences.
Yeah.
I feel funny about that. But I understand in that, like, what do you do if you repeatedly have a student who's creating a problem or causing harm to themselves or others and you don't have any way to really deal with it in the long term or the short term?
Yeah. They go on to make one last point here. Restorative justice is a nice idea, but in order for it to be effective, it requires a substantial amount of staffing and training for that staff, along with a large buy-in from the students and staff in the school.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It's 100%
to do it right.
And I think if I'm a product of DPS, as I've said before, the difference that I saw between coming from 8 years of private school into public school was like night and day in terms of the resources that you have.
Yeah.
And that was in the 90s and it has not gotten better. So I fully empathize with these teachers and I appreciate these perspectives.
So we got a bunch more like that. I'll put some more in the show notes, but I wanted to end on a nice one.
Oh, yeah.
This one's from Nancy B, who writes, I figure you all get a ton of feedback on today's show, so I made sure the subject line would let you know that this is positive feedback. Thanks for taking on some difficult issues with such evident humanity. When I get overwhelmed with the self-centeredness of much of the media and many politicians, I'll remember the intelligence, care, openness Tim and Bree gave us on this show. Parentheses, with Paul as a centering presence.
I think you said you wanted to put that on your business card.
I know. I love
Paul Caroli.
Centering
presence. Bree Davies, off the rails.
Nancy ends with, please keep on speaking the truth and bringing us fun, quirky stories. You got it, Nancy.
I love that. Thank you. Yeah. Also, but thank you to everybody for your feedback. I agree with Nancy in that, like, it's easier to leave negative feedback in any capacity. But this is a very serious issue, and I see where folks wanted to hear. There's many different perspectives. And I appreciate that educators wrote in and told us, hey, this is not what we're experiencing. So one teacher is a good voice.
Yeah.
Sometimes, but there are other teachers as well.
Sometimes it's hard feedback to get, but it's also like really important because it'll make us better next time and help push the conversation further.
Well, this was fun. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah. Thanks, Bree. That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed the show, why not take a minute to tell WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter, Hey Denver, by visiting denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See you then.